This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's Mike Shope.
I go into nice family restaurants and I see people throwing this name around and pretending as though everything is just fine. I'm talking about boneless chicken wings. I propose that we as a city remove the... Excuse me, I'm trying to...
Yeah.
And the bulldog.
Boneless chicken wings are just chicken tenders, which are already boneless. I don't go to order boneless tacos. I don't go and order boneless club sandwiches. I don't ask for boneless auto repair. It's just what's expected.
It's Mike Shope and the bulldog.
I propose that we rename boneless wings in the city of Lincoln. We can call them buffalo-style chicken tenders. We can call them wet tenders. We can call them saucy nugs or trash.
On WGR.
We can take these steps and show the country that we understand that we've been living a lie for far too long. And we know it because we feel it in our bones.
Sports Radio 550.
Morning guys did favorite Sabres today. 10 favorite Sabres.
Well, they did. I didn't know that.
With Paul. Yeah.
Paul was in, and Howard's got to tweet his 10 favorite Sabres. You think you could guess Howard Simon's 10 favorite Sabres? How many would be a good result? Like, if you got 7 right? How well do you know Howard?
Boy. I feel like I know him pretty well. I feel like I know him pretty well. Seven. I think 7's a good score.
7's a good score.
7's a good score.
Like, your favorite is Gare, right?
Right. It's funny that I didn't know that they did that. I saw the Sabres tweet, happy birthday to Danny, and I got on that and quote tweeted it and said in the tweet that it's my all-time favorite Sabre, Danny Gare.
And today's his birthday.
Yeah.
May 14th. Does he go by May 14th or day 134? So he would be number one for you. Now, Howard did not grow up here.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if Danny's not even on his list.
He's not. Nobody is on his list from before the 90s. No, one guy is. One guy is. Mike Ramsey.
Okay. Okay, I want to guess his list. Mike Ramsey.
Yep.
I know. I think I know that Marty Baron is on his list.
Yes.
I saw a tweet that I guess now makes more sense. I didn't realize they were compiling a list, but I saw somebody, maybe it was Nate, who was working, I think, with Howard, at least he was yesterday, I don't know if he was in today with him, say, you can't put Marty on your list. I don't know why he said that, but anyway, okay.
Why would that not
I don't,
be allowed?
I don't know. All right, so Mike Ramsey, Marty, I'm going to say he's got LaFontaine on there.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have Briere and Drury both on there.
Briere, not Drury.
Ooh.
Drury would be on yours, right? Top 10?
Yes. Top 10. I don't know. I mean, it's such a short amount of time, but probably, yes. Probably. Mogilny?
No.
All right, I'm out. I've already missed too many.
Briere, Hasek, Eichel, Vanek, Miller, McKee, Dumont.
Dumont, that's nice. Dumont's a nice pull.
Mine are Larson, Pesek, Pilot, Sakara, Briere. I put Gilbert Perreault on mine. He's one of my top 10 favorite Sabres of all time.
I think that's acceptable, yeah.
Maybe I get to Reinhardt. I like the guys that, you know, just hear people's, you hear people dog them.
Does that mean I have to put Schmelick on my list?
Yes. Jason Pominville would be on my list. I always like Jason Pominville. How could you not?
Pominville, right? I feel like, would be on everybody's list.
How could you not? Howard probably just forgot about him or something. How could you not put Jason Pominville? It's his list.
Sounds like he liked Dumont more than Pominville.
It's his list.
He had Vanek over Pominville, too.
Yeah.
I feel like Vanek guys can also not be Pominville guys.
Is that right?
I don't know why.
You're either a Vanek guy or a Pominville guy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Max for you? I would consider Max, who was not my favorite player always, but when I interacted with him one time through tennis, he was great. So, you know, I don't know if Howard would do it this way or if you would, but like McKee and guys, Marty, guys that you know, yeah. Pominville, I don't really know him, but I've talked to him a few times, like that, you know, elevates them.
Yeah, I have a hard time keeping Rob Ray off my list, honestly.
Rob Ray. Yeah, how about that guy for this? Rob Ray.
And we're not talking about who we think are the best players in the history of the franchise. We're talking about our favorites. Rob is definitely one of my all-time favorites.
All right.
See, I wouldn't factor in the meeting them part. Like, I met a Finneganoff once as a kid, and he was pretty standoffish. But
maybe,
I don't care.
Maybe
I don't
not care. Everybody is easygoing around kids.
Yeah. I didn't care. Like, on the ice, that was my guy. Him and Campbell are on a tier of their own for me. Like, I'd have to, for my third favorite, I'd have to do a lot of thinking. But one and two are easy.
Max and Campbell. Were you, like, getting his autograph or something?
Yeah, getting his autograph out somewhere. Like, not at, like, an autograph signing.
Oh.
Like, just out in public.
Yeah.
A restaurant,
well,
maybe.
Bulldog, you've done that sometimes in your life, right?
Autograph?
Yeah.
In public?
Yeah. Never? Not even as a kid?
Like, not in a like a practice setting or something. Like, I mean, I got some Bills, I got OJ's autograph at training camp when it was at Niagara University. Like, that's an autograph session,
okay.
Kind of, right? No, I don't think I've ever. I just didn't have, as a kid, I don't remember ever really being around the players aside from, you know, that kind of scenario. I didn't go places where I would run into hockey players or football players. And so I've never had occasion to approach someone in public for an autograph. I'm sure I've run into guys over the years that either I knew loosely earlier in my radio career that I like went up and hey, remember me? We talked on the radio once, blah, 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 that kind of thing in public. But I don't think I've ever asked for an autograph at a non, you know, autograph type setting.
Okay. But like OJ, that would count for me. Like that's just,
okay.
You right. know, you're at practice.
Right. Okay.
That's what you're doing there is to ask for
right.
autographs.
Right. And the players are coming. You're not interrupting a meal. Like, you're not walking over to their table. Like, they're coming over to you. They know why you're there. So that's what I mean by an autograph
yes.
setting.
Yes.
Whereas what Joe is describing might have been, you know, something, you know, a little quite different than that. But I don't have a lot of autographs. You know, like I got, you know, Mike Gilbert, when he was with the Sabres, was kind enough to offer to get a U.S. Olympic jersey signed by Ryan Miller for Owen, for me, but I wasn't a part of the process other than, like, Mike offering to do that and me bringing the jersey to him to do. So I don't have a lot of autograph experience, honestly.
Okay. Plus, I did the card shows for a while, and there were a couple of those, like the Bob Gibson story I have.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, we have relatively modest experience in this area. Well,
yeah, I sat next to guys. I mean, obviously, I did all these radio shows out with Rob and Glenn Parker and Eric Molds and just lots and lots of guys over the years. So, I mean, I sat next to the guy signing autographs for people,
mm-hmm.
But I don't have a lot of experience getting them myself. In fact, I've often, not often, but I mean, every now and then, like I've got this great old you know, original white Sabres jersey. Like, it's a real jersey with the fight strap and everything. It's not one that Rob Ray actually wore, but it's a Rob Ray authentic Sabre sweater. And I thought, like, you know, we used to see him twice and three times a week for a long time. I never thought to bring it in to have him sign it. it's sort of silly to me, but anyway.
Well, once they sign it, maybe you don't want to wear it, but I don't see you wearing it very often anyway.
No, it doesn't.
Sort of out of that phase of your life.
When I was a real little kid, I got an autograph from Dick Vitale, but I don't think I knew who he was until I was at least 15 years old.
How did that happen?
Just, like, out somewhere at some basketball event. I don't even remember exactly. I was a real little kid.
Around here, for something.
I had this mini basketball with Dick Vitale's signature, and it just was around until I finally one day figured out I have that guy's autograph, and I didn't know this whole time.
You need to ask, you know, your dad or whoever was with you to tell you the story of how you got it, because you wouldn't know, remember it.
How did we get Dick Vitale's autograph?
So, doesn't sound like the three of us have too many traumatic stories in this area. Yeah.
I have one, but it doesn't involve a sports figure. It involves a
politician.
Right. I went to get Chris Collins' autograph, and he was such a jerk. No, Paul Westerberg is the lead singer and rhythm guitar player and main songwriter in The Replacements, one of my favorite bands. After they broke up, he played on his first solo tour at the 12th, which sadly we learned is closing this week. It's one of my great memories of that room is seeing Westerberg there. And after that show, he was friends with a friend of mine, Terry Sullivan, who's about 10 years older than me. And Terry is one of the greatest rock and roll performers the city has ever seen. And he knew Paul from, like, just, you know, just working your way up and just fighting the fight, right? They were friends. And so Westerberg was talking to Terry on the patio of a place on Chippewa before Chippewa was really booming, but there were a couple of spots. And I went over and interrupted the conversation, really, so Terry could introduce me to my hero, and I clumsily asked for his autograph, and he signed I had ticket stubs from my friends. They all wanted me, because I knew Terry, to go approach Westerberg and get this autograph. So I had three ticket stubs with me. No, I had four, actually. And I asked Paul if he would sign them, and he sort of gave me this look and went like, I'll sign them, but I'm not signing all four. And so he wrote Paul on one, Harold on another, and Westerberg on a third, and that was it. So I had, and Harold is his middle name. I ended up trading away. I kept them all. I don't know how I ended up with them all, but my friends, nobody wanted. I guess it was decided. I went up and initiated this transaction, and seeing as how you've got, like, none of them are going to be that meaningful, everyone just said, you can keep them all. So I kept them. And eventually I traded the Paul and the Westerberg for an autographed CD liner case that a friend of mine at WBNY had. And I kept Harold. So I still have Harold, because I think it's pretty cool that I've got a ticket stub with Paul Westerberg's middle name on it. And but I just felt like a fool. Like, Terry was someone I really look up to, and I was just, you know, your music means a lot to me, blah, blah. Yeah, I was just a total chump. Mm-hmm. And I was scarred by that. I mean, I just felt like such a tool. Because there's Westerberg, and again, another guy that I know pretty well, but I still felt like such a loser. In fact, knowing Terry as well as I did made it worse. Because I just felt like I embarrassed him, I embarrassed myself, and whatever. Here we are, you know, 30 years later, I've got Harold. And a signed, you know, CD liner notes.
Signed by him.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. That's a great story. I don't think I've ever heard that story.
I don't know that. I think I've told it because when we used to have Jim Rome on our show before us, his show was on before our show. He has a very similar Westerberg story that he has told, and he's had Westerberg on his show, maybe more than once, and Tommy Stinson from the band too.
Still alive?
They're all still alive. And I was going to laugh that, like, here's Jim Rome, this, like, superstar in the same medium that I'm in, and he's got the exact same story, basically, as me, like, being drunk and making a fool of yourself going to try to talk to one of his heroes, Paul Westerberg.
All right. That's pretty good. A little bit of trauma, enduring trauma. I love the idea of a ticket stub with the guy's only his middle name on it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like if it's Mick Jagger or somebody like that. I don't know if Paul Westerberg's autograph, you know, there's a market for it. Maybe there is. I mean, he's known.
Yeah.
If it's sort of Elvis or somebody, Elvis Aaron Presley, right?
Right. Right.
Imagine if you just had him. You know, you could get authenticated his middle name. He just signed, that's it, on a piece of paper or on a ticket or something like that. That would be, like, amazing to have that. So I like your story.
I remember thinking then, like, I didn't, you know, it wasn't like this was 1994, maybe. I don't remember, like, being able to research if his middle name really was Harold. And it's been a long time since I've looked, but I'm pretty sure that I confirmed at some point that it actually is. He did sign his actual middle name. But I would need to check for sure. But I'm either way, it's a cool story. But I think it's his real middle name.
Yeah. Very good. You know, sometimes those interactions do not go exactly how you imagined them going or wanted them to go. Sometimes they don't.
No.
But, you know, you had the courage in that moment to ask him. And, you know, you got a story out of it and a ticket.
Yeah, right. I mean, in the end, maybe the lesson is, you know, even though I felt like an idiot, I don't really regret it. You know, because it is it's a fun story.
Right.
It's nice remembering it. Like, it's not something I think about often. I have that CD liner notes and the Herald ticket stub underneath the glass top on my dresser, but there's a bunch of other stuff on top of it, so it's not like I see it all the time. But if I ever move stuff around on my dresser, I'll see it, and I go, oh, yeah, that was, you know, whatever. Like, I don't regret it, I guess, is what I'm saying, even though I felt like an idiot.
I'm sitting here as you're talking, thinking of, like, because I've done some amount of collecting, right? Like, who have I interacted with where I was sort of, where I did a bad job or where I'd feel, like, traumatized by it at all? And nothing is that terrible. If it were, I'd remember it, you know, instantly.
Right.
Things like that, I have no trouble recollecting. But Ken Burns, maybe a little bit. I'm still not haunted, but I can still remember 1994, I guess, is the year where I'm working for the Rochester Red Wings. And they would have, like the Bisons would, they would have, you know, famous people, ex-players and different people in for, like, a promotion. And people could get autographs and meet them or whatever. I remember George Foster, who was one of my favorite players growing up, George Foster, Reds and Mets, like my two teams. And he was great, just super friendly. I was the PA announcer then. Like, I was not in the booth. I was in the booth the next year. But I could still, like, I remember being asked to go get Ken Burns. You know who he is?
Yes, of course. Yes.
So I had to go. He had a young woman with him. I don't know who. He had a young woman with him, and they were sort of giggling or talking. And I just sort of stood there waiting for a moment so that I could interrupt and say, excuse me, they're ready for you in the booth or something. I probably had to give him the whole idea. I don't know. But I loved that baseball series, you know, and I think the Civil War, too, was out by then. I loved that. I took a college course in it, and we watched all of it. And so I admired him. I still do. And so, you know, you think, like, kind of maybe you did a little bit or other people would. You want to have a moment, right? You want to say something.
Right.
I remember getting Wendell Clark's autograph once, and I had a Wendell Clark jersey. He was my favorite hockey player, and he just grunted and didn't look up. Like, I might have said something about how big a fan I was, and he just grunted and didn't look up. So,
not
like,
a real satisfactory transaction.
No, right. I never liked him as much after that day.
Right.
So with Ken Burns, I wanted to do something. I wanted to say something that would mean something, and I cited a couple of examples. I'm not going to quote myself, even though I think I could. I cited a couple of examples from the baseball series that were, like, super meaningful to me. I'm 22. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's like, he was not unfriendly, but I, as soon as we had walked the distance and I had sort of left him with the broadcasters, I felt like I had embarrassed myself and that he was probably annoyed. That's how I felt by it. But he didn't tell me that.
Right.
Most of the time you can tell from people.
Right, yeah. He probably wasn't annoyed, but you definitely told him something he'd heard 100
times. Yeah, I think so.
Right?
Right.
Which is what the problem with my Westerberg interaction was, is, like, you know, your music means so much to me. Like, who doesn't say that to one of their favorite songwriters? You know, like, that's it. But what else are you supposed to say? You know, like, well, I really liked your guitar tonight. Like, I, you know, what do you say? You know, you're nervous. You know, yeah. So it's tough.
Nice mustache.
Right.
I don't know. We don't know what to say sometimes. Here is right. Dan with us. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, Dan.
Hey,
thanks.
I just quick story. I know you guys are reminiscing about you know, meeting celebrities and whatnot. I came home on leave from active duty, maybe 92, 93. Buddy of mine got tickets for Billy Joel, Elton John at Rich Stadium, and we took our girlfriends, and as soon as we sat down, the girls got beer dumped on them. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So we went up, but we were at the end of the stairs. It was the club level, and I looked in, and there was nobody in one of the clubs, and there was napkins. So I grabbed some napkins, and wiping off the girls, then around the corner comes someone who goes, what's going on? They go, I'm sorry. The girls got beer spilled on them. Just grab some napkins. She goes, well, come on in. We'll get everybody cleaned up. And it was Rob Ray in his second or third year.
And so he invited you all into his suite or whatever?
The whole concert in the club seat.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
Nice.
That's all I got.
Yeah, good. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate you sharing that with us.
Cool. Very cool.
That sounds like the Rob.
Yep.
We know, right?
Sounds like Rob. Yes, for sure.
All right. We'll take a break here. Happy Friday, everybody. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
I go all the way back to the very, very start when, at the draft lottery, Tim Murray, who was then the GM of the Sabres, upon the results becoming official and the Sabres getting the second pick, seemed to just be upset about the process instead of welcoming the fact that likely we're going to end up with Jack Eichel. And I think if I was Eichel at that time, I would have been like, this wasn't the response I was expecting. So right from the start, it seemed like, you know, there have been some challenges in that relationship.
EJ Raddick with that point this morning on WGR. Bulldog, what do you think of it?
I think it's a point worth making. I remember not really at the time appreciating how upset Murray seemed. And I didn't really think of it as how Eichel might feel about it. But you know, and I remember hearing, maybe it was even in something that the Sabres themselves put out, like some recap of the draft, that Eichel told them, you're going to feel like you won this lottery, don't worry, or something like that. I feel like I heard that, either heard it said myself or heard that it was said. I don't remember which now, I'm sorry.
It doesn't feel that way quite yet.
No, I don't. I'm not optimistic about that turning out. Mm. No. But I've never really thought of it from Eichel's perspective, I guess. So I like hearing EJ make that point.
Well, it sort of implies that there was damage done on the first night. And I don't know. I've never really thought that. But I understand it. I remember being disappointed in that. And I think you said this.
In Murray, right?
Yes.
Like being upset.
Yes.
Right.
I also didn't want to really care about it, right? Like, just come on. It's just sort of a, mm-hmm. just came out that way. But I was disappointed in it because the whole thing was not about whether the Sabres had the Erie Otters here for a game. At least I thought it was. It was not about that, and it was not about that there was only a 20% chance of success in that lottery. The whole point was that there would be a 100% chance at success in that lottery as long as they finished in last place. And for anybody, you know, especially Tim Murray, in that moment, to sound like they didn't see it that way, yeah, that was disappointing. But, I, you know, sometimes it's just like, how you feel comes into it, and how I felt was, all right, we're not going to worry about that. You know, we're not going to worry about that. I never have worried about that. I have never have thought it meant anything to the Sabres' results. And I still wouldn't say that. But you wonder, I guess, if Eichel, like, if it bothered him, if he thinks about it, anything like that. That's kind of the implication here.
I guess now, like, with the benefit of looking at...
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What are we into? Have these guys just finished their 6th seasons? Is that where we're at? Okay. Having the benefit of watching 6 seasons, I mean, not that, like, you know for sure, but it seems like Murray maybe had more separation between the two guys than a lot of us did.
Yeah.
And that's why he felt that way. And, you know, there's some validation in the careers. I mean, even, you know, pre all this mess, you know, McDavid has been the better player, and it's not even really that close. And Eichel's excellent. It's just McDavid is the best guy in the league and looks like he's going to be that for even with other guys nipping at his heels, like his own teammate, even Dreisaitl or Nathan MacKinnon. He's a superstar's superstar.
That's why maybe it's a part of a larger point that maybe Eichel has had a feeling of, like, maybe there's a little subtle resentment in the fan base over the years that he's not Connor McDavid. Like, I would imagine there's a little of that. If he ever goes on social media, he's got to see there's at least a little of that out there. That, well, what would be different if, here's what McDavid is doing. And, like, oh, but like, it's all about McDavid, I think, for that point. I don't know that it's right, but if I were him, I would be a little annoyed that my team still wishes, of course, that they had Connor McDavid.
The first, and as it to this point, the only time I've ever sat with him was before Bulldog was there, before he was drafted. And I think the first question, if it wasn't the first question, was a question you asked him, you brought up to Eichel, was something having to do with McDavid. Something that, because McDavid was there too for the combine. Mm-hmm. It was in the Harbor Center for that combine before the draft. And you asked him something about McDavid, and maybe Eichel had made a remark or something that you asked him about him, and he just sort of, like, you didn't even get to finish the question, as I remember it. He sort of just jumped in, and he's like, I wasn't comparing myself with him or anything like that. He was a little bit sort of edgy in the way he often has seemed over the years, you know, like, just sort of, to Joe's point about McDavid. You know, it's just, do you remember that, by the way, that way?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I don't remember anything more specific than what you've told me, but it feels very familiar. As
you had another interview with him that I was not there for later.
Right. I had him and Reinhardt before they played that scrimmage, the prospects tournament scrimmage. So probably that's maybe a month after the draft, maybe, or after this interaction that you're talking about. And I had the two of them together, and And I blame myself. It was one of those very awkward. It just didn't go well, And but I remember my biggest takeaway from that, well, there were two. Reinhardt had put on a lot of muscle, it appeared, and Eichel seemed shot. Like, looking at him, looking in his eyes, he just looked exhausted to me. And, you know, I don't know, that's a weird judgment to make, but it felt like all of the draft stuff and everything that he'd been asked to do or really had to do as a top prospect in the draft had just sort of run him into the ground. Like, he just looked worn out to me. And I thought, okay, it's July. I hope you get a little time off here, you know, because, you know, you're gonna be on the ice pretty soon in meaningful games, and, you know, you need to recharge.
Well, it would not come as any surprise, I would say, if McDavid's existence has always been a part of Eichel's edge, his attitude, you know, his drive, whether it is about the Sabres or his own play or anything. Like, we all heard about him described as a better prospect than some other number one picks. And that would still be true, easily true. But he wasn't anybody's choice over Connor McDavid. Anybody's.
No.
Like, just not even close. And so, I mean, he does seem to have this sort of personality, at least what we see publicly and in his game, where, you know, he's got an edge to him, which is good. I would think that, you know, if you built a hockey team, you would want guys with an edge. They want to, you know, try to prove themselves all the time and whatever. But you won't necessarily know how they really feel. And for him, as it's turned out, he's always had to answer to McDavid's excellence, right? They're always tied together.
I think that's right. But to what Joe said there about, you know, the fan base, I don't know. I've never felt like – it has never felt to me like fans held that against him or something. You know, it has felt to me like mostly – Eichel has gotten like the treatment that a player of his stature, where he was drafted, his ability, even how he's performed, has gotten a pretty fair ride here. I mean, there's always going to be people out there that are hypercritical and just never going to be satisfied. And so I'm not saying that doesn't exist within the fan base, like people that still feel mad that they didn't win the lottery and lost out to McDavid. But I don't know. I guess maybe it's because I never really felt as about that, at least at the time. You know, I mean, what are you going to do about it? You got an excellent player.
Right.
We should be able to make that work. And that's how I felt about it. And I guess, I don't know, if I'm mischaracterizing, you know, the fan base, you know, my apologies. But I don't feel like people here have been, like, constantly comparing him to McDavid or something. Like, I think, you know, you know the guy's better than your guy. There's no real arguing it, you know? So I think you sort of leave it there and like, okay, how good is my guy? Well, my guy's pretty good. Or, you know, really good.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of that, but you're saying it doesn't seem like it's everywhere. It's just like we all would have our different way of drawing the line, but, you know, if it's Twitter, we're mostly talking about there's a certain percentage of, you know, whoever, the people, a certain aspect of it that's just always going to be jerky, you know, like they're,
right.
No matter what the subject is, who the person is, there's just like a jerk quotient or something that's just, you know, every time.
And right. you want McDavid would have to deal with that. I mean, that's
yeah,
just how
it's not like
the
they've won anything. Right. So you would just want to get to a point where you can just sort of dismiss it, but it's not always easy to do that. It's not easy for anybody necessarily to do that. I don't know how he really feels, you know, about that. Or a lot of things. And he might not even be on the team by the next time they play games.
Right.
It'll all be over.
It might not really be any of our concern anymore.
How yeah.
he feels about anything.
That's right. All right, time out here. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, 803-0550 for us. This is WGR. In a moment, we will once again get connected with our fans, brought to you by Bond, Schenick, and King, a full-service Buffalo law firm. First, however, how about another pair of tickets to see Zach Brown Band, September 5th at Darien Lake. Caller 5 wins at 644-9878. Tickets went on sale this afternoon. Zach Brown Band, Adam Doliak, Ashland Kraft. The show Sunday, September 5th. At Darien Lake. Good luck. I see the Royals won. First of two at Chicago against the White Sox. Remember, I asked you guys, well, I know what date it was, actually. Less than 2 weeks ago.
Who had
the best record in the majors? That's right, and the answer was Kansas City. They have not won since. They lost 11 straight, but they won today. They should have gotten this
back,
in.
Baby.
They're back. Back. They've got the momentum now for that second game. They'll probably win the second game because they feel so happy about the win. I wanted to get that in before they went and won a game today because that would have been better had they just not won at all since this came up. Actually, you know what? That was maybe on a Thursday or Friday, then they won on the Saturday, and then they lost 11 straight. I think that's what happened. So, you know, they no longer have the best record in the major leagues, even with today's win.
It's tough to lose 11 in a row and think you're just going to come out the other side with the best record.
It is. Now who does? The San Francisco Giants have the best record in baseball. It's really compacted. And I wanted to say this earlier, but didn't. When we were talking about the 17-game NFL schedule and whether 12-5 is good enough to think, like, is that realistic for the first seed or whatever, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So not only do you have an extra game, but it's all built on how the teams did last year. Whatever place you finished in your division, your 17th game is against another team that finished in the same place in their division. Everybody. All the first place teams play right. Other first place teams. Buffalo and Washington, right? Mm-hmm. And I know how changeable the league is, but if you accept that means good teams versus good teams, bad teams versus bad teams, that should scrunch the standings together a little bit. If it were good teams against bad teams, it could stretch them out. If the Bills played the last place team in whatever division instead, they'd be likelier to win that game. The bad team would be likelier to lose it, and the standings would stretch out. But this way, they, you know, in theory, should get tighter. So maybe it's a small thing, but it's a thing. Maybe you have a season here where there aren't as many really good or really bad records, and that could be a reason why.
Makes it all the more reason to settle for 12-5.
To take 12-5.
Take 12-5.
There's right. There's another thing about that I like, by the way, and that's when the schedule came out on Wednesday night, everything I saw about the Sunday night schedule and the Monday night schedule was how impressive it was. And, you know, this is Twitter, and you would usually think you might see some criticism of it. How could the Well, people did say this. How could Chicago get on so many times? Like,
right.
There was that. But there was also a lot of, wow, the schedule is really great. And I think logically, there are more good games to pick from. Good-looking games. Right? Green Bay and Kansas City play because of the 17th game.
Right. It's not a matchup you would have had this year.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Buffalo and Washington isn't the best because Washington was only 7-9. It's not the obvious right. Example, isn't the NFC East. But still, like, you have playoff teams playing playoff teams, division winners versus division winners. And right. When you're writing the schedule, it doesn't matter which game goes when, you're just looking for the top matchups, uh-huh. And there are more to choose from.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think, like, in a normal year, like, if Dak Prescott hadn't gotten hurt, maybe the Cowboys win the NFC East at 10-6 or 11-5, and a Cowboys-Bills game is another game on the schedule that people would go, wow, that's a great-looking game.
That's it. That's right. More good matchups, good-looking matchups to pick from when making the schedule. Yeah. All right, here is Eddie with us. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, thanks, guys. Yeah, love your different examples of meeting people. I've run into different sports figures, and I've always felt if I'm in public and they're in public, I can always have that sense of, like, you know, I'm not that guy. I would like it, but I've never been a big signature kind of guy anyway. Mm. But the one guy I always ran into was Jay McKee, like, all the time. He went to my same GameStop, so I'd run into him in the parking lot. I'd see him after the game and under the parking venue. Like, I don't understand why, but McKee and I would always run into each other. But I was doing my school was asked to, we were doing a fundraiser for the Buffalo Sabres alumni, and I think Rob was president at the time, if not still, and they had asked me to do the play-by-play. So I went out and got, like, what I thought was, like, the best Don Cherry 1970s suit I could find, and
Putting me on a mic is always dangerous, so I had a blast with it, and I just did my best Rick Jenneret, but on a basketball, you know, so I'm calling Rick Sealing and Rick Dudley, and I'm in my glory. I mean, these guys are the guys I watched growing up, and after we finished, you know, Rob was so humble, just such a great guy. I know you guys have already said that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, could you take a photo with me? And he goes, oh, absolutely. I go, well, I kind of wanted, like, you know, you to, you know, how do you feel when you first get in, you're going to get into it with a guy? Well, he grabs me by my suit, pulls me towards him, and he's got this fist, and someone took the picture right as he did it. And it's this great photo that I just love. His fist is the size of my head.
Nice.
And I felt scared. I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, I really, he got me. He goes, I got you, didn't I? I go, yeah,
I'll
you
bet,
got me.
Yeah, man, and, I'll bet that's a super candid picture, man. That is awesome.
It's a great picture. And they even gave me a stick. Everybody signed. It was just such a great experience seeing those guys and seeing what they give back to the community. And, yeah, then I just said, that's what I wanted to share. And I was at the school where my sister-in-law had taught science for my daughter. But, yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Appreciate you sharing that.
We've seen it. I mean, Rob has won over lots of people that way. Not that one guy.
The Ranger fan.
The Ranger guy. Yeah, that probably right. didn't. That guy's not on hold to tell us how much he loves Rob, probably.
That guy wanted to fight Rob. Yeah.
He didn't know who Rob was, maybe,
that
too?
Really, probably. That was, boy, that's an all-time show moment.
Joe, we're at 716. Rob is sitting with us, and just like a nothing moment, guys are walking past us all the time, every time, going to the bathroom, whatever. Guy in a Ranger jersey walks by. And as he starts to walk by, Rob says, "Rangers suck," like this. And the guy stops and sort of turns, or he's going around the corner. He stops and he looks back. And what then? He came back later.
Well, he went and sat across the way at the bar yes. from our, and he had a friend with him, and we could see them talking. We're doing the segment with Rob. The whole thing with Rob, like launched that segment with like, everybody's too nice. There's no animosity left in the sport. And so we need to get a little hate going here. And just at that moment, this guy in the Ranger jersey walked by. So Rob goes, "Rangers suck." And the guy went and he's talking to his friend. And like they're looking like
pointing.
they're gonna fight. Like they want to come over and fight Rob or us. And
well, they would have been in big trouble.
That was amazing. That was an amazing moment.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Hopefully that guy calmed down.
Yeah.
We'll have the update. We have a game coming up. And if you missed Greg Buck earlier, that's coming up as well. A repeat performance from Greg Buck today. A new one that he found. I mean, that we found.
Right. There you go. That's the way to say it. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.